case, Ezell versus Potter.
May I turn?
May I please the court? My name is Anna Hearn, and I represent Stephen Ezell in this matter. To begin with, Mr. Ezell complied with all the EEO remedies available, and thus, Mr. Ezell's hostile work environment claim is not barred. The United States Supreme Court in Berwerkowitz versus Saroma, 534 U.S. 506, has held that employment discrimination complaint need not include the specific facts and instead must only contain a short and plain statement of the claim showing that the pleader is entitled to relief. Now, to compel the charging party to specifically state the charge filed with the commission, each and every intricate detail of the harassment she may have suffered may cause the very persons which Title VII was designed to protect to lose that protection because they're ignorant or unable to thoroughly understand the discriminatory or harassing practices to which they're subjected to. But in this case, Mr. Ezell actually stated all the facts in his EEO complaint. If you look at the complaint itself, does not have a box for hostile work environment. He checked race, he checked sex, he checked age. He's a 51-year-old white male, and he checked all those boxes. In his affidavit to the EEO, he specifically stated he also filed a timely. Tangela Wright, who was the supervisor on March 24th, 2004, issued an wanted to terminate Mr. Ezell after 29 years of service with no prior disciplinary record.
Is she still his boss?
Not anymore. She's now in Gary, Indiana. On April 4th, they issued this notice of a removal letter saying that he's going to be fired on May 12th. 38 days later. Just think if you had to wait 38 days thinking you're going to be fired after 29 years of service with the U.S. Postal Service. His only job he's basically had his whole life, his career. Now, he did, when he, the fact that he alleged in there, it says she's made several remarks regarding older carriers in general, referred to my gray hair, told me and another 55-year-old male that we only had one speed slow. I responded that I was carrying the mail as fast as I could. She replies, maybe I should consider another line of work. Mike Pablo Diaz, the other person that was with Tangela Rice, who was together in issuing the notice of removal, specifically stated it was the post office's plan to get rid of older carriers and replace them with younger, faster carriers. Now, this has happened shortly before his termination.
Ms. Hearn, let me just ask you this, please. Did the termination ever take effect?
It did not because Mr.
All right. Did he lose any pay or time on the job at all?
It is our position that he did. He had 900 hours of sick time, and he used that because he became so stressed because of fear of losing his job, he became sick. And as a result, plus the stress of having to wait 38 days to see, the only reason he got his job back is he fought for it. He went to the union. He filed an EEO complaint. There was an investigation. If he didn't fight for his job, he would have been terminated on May 12th.
But did the... Look, the warning letter. I mean, I understand that that letter had the potential to affect his raises and promotions, etc. cetera, but did it, in fact, have an effect on his pay or promotion?
It did not. That letter
did. Did it ever affect the terms, the conditions of his employment?
Well, when it was initially issued, it would have. But since he
no, but did it?
Ultimately, it did not. Not only was did he get the adverse employment action, which is our contention, he also suffered a hostile work environment. All these statements were stated to him. In addition, with respect to the racism...
In the part of your brief in which you discussed the question whether there was adverse action, you didn't say anything, did you, about this illness, you say, made him ill?
I think that I know in the summary judgment there was, and I think that it was briefly stated that he became stressed and he was under a doctor's care.
Argue in your brief that this is what made that letter of termination have an adverse effect on him.
I read the brief. Again, I did not write the brief, but I did read it, and I thought we did address it briefly. I thought we stated it had a stress on him, and he had to take some of his 900 accumulated sick time. I think we did briefly address it. It was there or in the summary judgment itself, our response to the summary judgment. Now, some of the comments that Tangela Wright, a black female, made under the age of, substantially younger than Mr. Ezell, made to him and other white employees in the Valparaiso unit. You gotta understand, Valparaiso is predominantly white. She came from the Gary unit. She made the following statements. She said, they threatened to take us, she used the word threatened to take us to Gary for career training, said we wouldn't last a week. She said she was stopped by a car and they'd always make a run on her car. She also stated that...
But wasn't there an independent, non-discriminatory reason for terminating Mr. Ezell? Did he admit that he took more than his allotted lunch time and defend this by saying it was a common practice?
That is what Mike Pavlidia says. I think he said that he did not. He went to his truck and specifically was sorting mail during this time. If there were any... It may have been half a minute or what, I don't know exactly the amount of time, but I know he was sorting mail in his truck, which younger James Ritchie, who was born in 1968, was told to do by Tangela Wright. And he was disciplined for doing the same thing, sitting in his truck, sorting mail, trying to make sure everything was organized so he could deliver it to the citizens of the United States. Now, she also said she rejoiced when a person was killed in Valparaiso. Because I thought there was no crime in Valparaiso. People in Valparaiso think their shit doesn't stink. Now, it was continuous. It was not just one remark. And as a result, all these comments taken together, which he stated in his EEO complaint, shows that Mr. Ezell did plead a hostile work environment claim, and he gave examples of the racist, sexist, and age remarks stated by Wright. He also put these words in: threatened, confrontational, uncomfortable. The treatment received was reprehensible. Emotional distress placed on him was immeasurable and rude. Even in his EEO, he said he's under a doctor's complaint. And that EEO is in the affidavit, and it specifically says, I am currently under a doctor's care and will remain so till my life is restored. He specifically stated that. He goes, the reputation is forever tarnished. He said that the emotional distress that is on myself and my family have been placed is immeasurable. So he did state that he was under emotional distress as a result of giving the notice of removal.
So tell me this, is it your argument that Mr. Pavlidi also had a discriminatory motive?
Correct. And the reason being, he's the one who made the statement that it was the post office's goal to get rid of the older workers and replace them with younger, faster carriers. Tangella Wright may have had one motive, but I think she also had the same motive with respect to age. She made comments, well, maybe you should choose another line of work. So I think there are motives that age was a factor. He was discriminated. There was direct evidence that he was going to be fired because he's been with the post office for 29 years, and they're going to save money if they get rid of him.
So it's your view that Mr. Pavlidis, who made the same charge against Mr. Ezell as Ms. Wright did, in other words, that he had overextended his lunch and then claimed that time as work time, also had discriminatory motive, correct?
Correct.
All right.
Now, not only did he exhaust all of his administrative remedies pertaining to the hostile work environment, he also presented a genuine issue of fact with respect to the hostile work environment claims on the age, on the race, and I believe somewhat on the sex. There was comment that, men are lazy. She gave the women the preferential work assignment. They didn't have to walk in the inclement weather. They didn't have to carry as much. In addition to that, by looking at the totality of the circumstances, I think we did create a genuine issue of fact pertaining to that. When you look at all the evidence and all the mentioned statements, these statements also constitute direct evidence of Wright's intent and Mike Pavlidis' intent to discriminate against Ezell. And I won't bore you to go over those statements again. However, but it is obvious, and if it's evident when you read the facts all through the brief, the motion for summary judgments, and the affidavit, that it was their intent to get rid of the older workers, and she wanted to replace Mr. Ezell. She even made statements, I'm going to get some good old boys from Gary and try to replace you. So there's the race direct evidence, and there is also the age direct evidence. Am I?
Do you want to reserve some time for rebuttal?
Yes, and I think that, the reasons that they have given are pretextual. They were following him around, and it's convenient to know that Mr. Pavlidis, who made the statement about the older carriers, and Wright, both were there at the same time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hearn. Mr. Reed.
May it please the Court, my name is Joe Reed. I'm an Assistant U.S. Attorney in the Northern District of Indiana. I appear today on behalf of the defendant, Appellee, the Postmaster General of the United States. It is our request that this Court affirm the judgment of the District Court, which found that the plaintiff should take nothing by his complaint. I'd like to address briefly what I think is the theme of Mr. Ezell's case. He has picked out between 10 and 20, and I think just about 15 or so, specific statements that he says he's heard or overheard his supervisor, Tangela Wright, make. And he refers to these as a quote, litany of comments. And he says this litany of comments is such that he has a viable hostile work environment claim. He uses the same litany as circumstantial evidence of discriminatory discharge under the direct method proof. And he also uses the same litany of comments, these 15 or so comments, which the trial court correctly characterized, I think, at this stage of the case as plainly inappropriate, although I would submit that if the case were tried, there'd be dispute about were these statements made, in fact, or not. but he uses these also as the elements of the indirect method of proof. The difficulty with this theme, this litany of comments theme, is that when you measure the comments against the requirements for having a justiciable hostile work environment claim, there's an absence of evidence that the environment, even if it made him feel uncomfortable, and that's his word, not mine, made him feel uncomfortable, that there's no evidence that his discomfort altered the conditions of his employment. As to his discriminatory discharge claim, Ezell fails to show that there's an adverse employment decision, so his claims, so
I
that
I don't know how you, how do you square that with the Molnar decision, which was, the Molnar opinion is very similar, it was a, just a...
On the tangible employment issue?
Yes.
Molnar, and I have it in front of me, says this: a tangible employment action, as the court signaled in the Crady case.
You're looking at the wrong part of the opinion.
Okay. Well,
what she said, what Judge Wood said, was
a substantial detriment to plaintiff's employment
relation. The negative evaluation Booth gave Molnar was also a tangible employment action. The mere fact that the evaluation was reversed more than 6 months later and Molnar's career put back on track did not diminish its importance during the time it lasted. And the court upheld $500 in damages for that. For that evaluation.
Is your question relating to the notion that Ms. Hearn referred to, well, he got a letter of removal and then
precisely
that was there for that was there for 38 days and
well, precisely that's right. The complaint.
He okay. Got the termination letter and that termination letter would have been effective but for his grievance with the union. So I think that the question is, why wouldn't that be enough for adverse action?
And here's my answer to that. First of all, in the district court, the argument was he got a letter of removal that was reduced to a letter of warning in his file for 6 months. That was argued to be in the district court before Judge Simon. The argument was, that's an adverse employment action because it's a blemish on my career. Judge Simon said, no, that's not enough. In this court...
Now, how does that square with Molnar?
He got a letter of removal. He went out and grieved. It was reduced to a letter of warning.
Would you please relate this to the Molnar case?
Yes, I am. It was reduced to a letter of warning.
Please.
There was absolutely...
We know what happened. Now, look, that letter of warning deprives him of, or puts him at jeopardy in the future, does it not? Does it or does it not?
It did not.
And why
it was not the evidence, as Judge Simon's memorandum opinion found, the evidence here is, and he was candid about it, there was nothing happened. He got a letter of removal.
My question is, this letter is in his file, is that correct? The
no.
Warning letter.
It was there for 6 months.
Does it have any...
It has no tangible effect on his employment.
Let me answer my question. Don't be so belligerent.
Okay.
Has this letter of warning been forever purged from his file? So if he should get in trouble in the future, would this letter of warning be, could this letter of warning be picked up and used against him?
The answer to the last part of the question is I think not, because the decision was shall remain in his file for a period of 6 months. That's the decision.
But
isn't that
the sword of Damocles hanging over his head?
It was for 6 months.
Right. So is that not enough to view this as an adverse action?
I think not under Molnar.
How can you say that? Because in Molnar, it was a temporary negative evaluation. Precisely the same thing.
I think Molnar, and I don't mean to be disagreeable or belligerent, but my opinion is that Molnar stands for the proposition that an adverse employment act, not everything in a workplace...
Look,
is
you know what Molnar said, don't you? It says a negative evaluation, although temporary, was a tangible employment action.
The court upheld
a $500 damage award for that. Now, how is the temporary evaluation reversed more than 6 months later and Molnar's career put back on track, just like Easel's career? How do you distinguish that from the present case?
In other respect, Your Honor, I disagree that Molnar simply refers to a temporary evaluation. I think Molnar also refers to the confiscation of her art supplies.
That's a separate point.
I'm not sure, Your Honor.
The short duration is referring to the evaluation. Naturally relevant to the degree of damage Molnar suffered from the evaluation. But the jury's verdict of $500 on this claim indicates strongly the jury was aware of that fact. So I just don't see the difference.
Perhaps we disagree, Your Honor, but I simply suggest that I read Molnar for saying there has to be a tangible employment relationship.
Well, the court said the negative evaluation was a tangible employment action. It said exactly what you wanted to say. It was a tangible employment action, therefore damages could be awarded.
We are not dealing with a negative evaluation here. We're dealing with a letter that was removal.
But the negative evaluation was also removed. So it was also temporary. So how is it different?
Your Honor, if that's your position, I can accept
that.
That's not how I read Molnar.
That's what the opinion says.
Are you arguing in some way it's a lesser event in our case here before us than in Molnar?
I think so. I think my argument simply is that in this particular case, we have no adverse employment action. We were dealing at the district court level with an argument that the effect was a blemish on his career, and the court found that wasn't enough. We're dealing with a little different take on it at this level, that it was that it was something that he had to grieve. And my point there is, yes, you had to grieve, but what's the effect of that? Did you take a lunch period and go file your grievance, or lose an hour to go file your grievance? Is that come under those cases that say inconvenience isn't enough? There has to be a tangible employment action, something material, and that's how I read Molnar. If I may go on from that point, the hostile work environment issue, is it raised in the EEO or is it not raised in the EEO?
You seem to concede that he mentioned all of the facts that make up his hostile environment claim when he filed his EEO claim. He just didn't label it as such, and the EEO didn't investigate it as a hostile environment claim. But really, what case law would support your claim that he has to properly label the legal theory on which he wishes to proceed? Why wouldn't it be enough that he recited all of the facts making up that claim? It just seems to me that you couldn't have been harmed by his lapse of labeling.
Yes, and I think to go on, Ms. Hearn raised the question, well, isn't it a consideration that laymen sometimes fill out EEO complaints, and how strict should we be? I think that's a legitimate question. And I think the answer is in the law of hostile work environment itself, because that law says it has to be so severe and pervasive that it alters the conditions of your employment. Just being in an unhappy environment is not sufficient for a justiciable claim. Helen.
But don't you think he preserved his claim under perhaps a slightly different legal theory, but that, you know, you certainly knew you were, you know...
Your Honor, I believe a fair reading of that EEO complaint on its face says that he's concerned with a discriminatory discharge. And as we know, the uncontroverted evidence is the EEO investigator wrote him and said, we have your complaint, sir. We're going to investigate this claim of discriminatory discharge. Please tell us if there's something else or if you object, and that was not done. I think the law is, and I don't believe this Schwerkowitz case, I'm not sure I got that right, I do not believe it speaks to an EEO complaint. It speaks to a judicial complaint under the Age Discrimination and Employment Act. But I think the law is there's not notice pleading. We're not on a notice pleading standard. We're on what did you present to the EEO or to the administrative process to attempt to get a settlement. I would point the court to a recent case, A.J. versus Aramark, it's A-J-A-Y-I, and it speaks to the reason for the rule, and it talks about is your reading of the EEO simply a technical defect, or do the omissions, that is the failure to tell the court you have a hostile work environment claim, does it thwart the basic purposes of requiring a charge, which is to give the employer some warning of the conduct and afford the EEO and the employer an opportunity to settle the dispute through conference, conciliation, or persuasion? I think the proposition is the EEO complaint is read fairly and is read... not read technically, but I do not believe that simply including the words rude or confrontational fairly raises for the EEO or fairly gave an opportunity for resolution of a hostile work environment.
Back on the issue of adverse employment, how would you deal with a case like this? Suppose a person is fired, and a year later he's reinstated, and he's given back pay and so on and so forth. Would you say that since there had been no financial loss to him, that was not an adverse employment action?
No. You know, I think we'll find cases all over the board, but I'm not interested in cases
across the board. I'm interested in your answer to my question.
My answer is that if a person is fired...
You don't need ifs. I told you what the case is. Person is fired. Let me finish. A year later, he's reinstated with back pay, with every benefit restored, and as a result of that, he has suffered no financial harm whatsoever.
If I'm off for any period of time...
I told you what the situation was, and I'm asking you to tell me whether you think that is actionable as adverse employment action, even though there is no financial consequence. Now, answer yes or no, and then if you need to explain your answer, explain your answer.
The answer to that, Your Honor, is yes, absolutely. And the reason for that statement is, when I'm fired, I'm off. I don't go to work. When I'm fired and off work, that's an adverse employment action. That's tangible. That's something that has an adverse effect on me. And that's what distinguishes your example from Ms. Rizal's case.
Thank you.
I'm sorry if I was difficult, you know.
Thank you, Mr. Reed. Ms. Turn.
I think it, this case, the facts are even worse than Molnar. Not only did Mr. Ezell not get a slap on the hand, he was told he was fired. His conduct was so bad that he's going to be fired from 29 years of service. They wanted to end his employment with the teacher. They didn't even do that. They just put it in her file.
Now, is Mr. Reed correct that since the letter of warning was removed after 6 months, it has no further significance for Ezell's career?
I think he's incorrect, and the reason why is that there's a lot of the postmaster do is still there. There's other people that know the situation, that even though that letter of removal is gone.
But just as a matter of law, if the letter of warning is removed from your file, does that mean that in future disciplinary action, one couldn't go back and say, oh, this fellow has already been warned once?
I don't think there's any evidence that that has happened, and I think that they could look back. There's no evidence that they can't look back in that situation. Moreover,
if an employment situation and the supervisor says, I'm so unhappy with you, I'm considering, seriously considering, making a report regarding what I believe to be your weakness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I said. That never occurs. Is that an adverse employment action? So independent until some relief from that oppressive comment is made to the employer?
No, not as much, but in this case...
Not as much?
No, I don't think there is. And in this case, there was a letter of removal saying you will be fired in 38 days, and the only reason that his job was saved is because he fought for it. And the EEO did investigate those remarks, because if you look in Postmaster Dew's affidavit, he specifically says, oh, Tanja, I've never heard of those remarks. So the fact that they said that it wasn't investigated, it was investigated. And just because he didn't object, why would he object if the matter was being investigated? Also, in the EEO complaint, he didn't just say uncomfortable.
You make sense.
He also said, threatened, the treatment he received was reprehensible, and it goes on and on and on. So, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Green. Thank you, Ms. Green. Case is taken under advisement.